Let's turn to Psalm 23. As I say, I'm going to read 24 as well, and it does point to a great sense of completion. Psalm 23, another psalm of David, says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness, for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? Who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. He will receive blessings from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek the face of the God of Jacob. Lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord, strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O gates, and lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. I'm just going to focus for a few minutes on Psalm 23. As I said, possibly one of the most well-known psalms in Scripture. I can't think of another one that people know more. No. It's a psalm of David. Often we ascribe the title Shepherd to Christ. I'm led to assume that David was referencing God the Father as that shepherd. Christ wasn't born at that time, and his worship was directed towards God the Father. Thank you, Malcolm. I was worried that I was wrong there. That's the slight difference in the Davidic day and our day that we may see. But we see from this psalm that faithful people have two things. One, they have a shepherd. As I say, often we now ascribe that to Christ, and they have a host. So firstly, we see this shepherd, which is, you can think of, I believe, someone to help us whilst we're here on earth, where the host is preparing a heavenly place. And that's the difference. We have a shepherd. Verse 1 says specifically, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." The Lord is my shepherd. I don't know if you've spent much time with sheep. A friend of ours, his mum used to be a shepherdess, I've mentioned before, and we used to spend a little bit of time in the fields with the sheep. And sheep are incredibly unintelligent. Sheep are entirely lost without someone to guide them. I think I was telling Francis this morning, I remember seeing them caught in the rut between a ploughed field, and they fell over, and the liquid would go to one side. And if you picked them up, they would instantly fall over. You had to pick them up and hold on to this animal for quite a while before it could stand up on its own 4 feet. And without a shepherd there, or someone that was following them around to ride quad bikes, without someone there to help them, the sheep would have been entirely lost. It had no hope at all. Isn't that just a marvelous picture of us in relation to Christ? Absolutely no hope at all. There's nothing we can do without him. We are entirely lost. I'd like to think I'm vastly more intelligent than a sheep, and Christ is vastly greater than any of us. We are most definitely the sheep. And wonderfully, he doesn't give up on us, no matter how many ridiculous things we do. I've seen sheep get rescued from a situation and dive straight back into the same problem. That's a picture of us too, rescued from one situation and dive straight back into the same. But mercifully, blessedly, we have a shepherd. David had a shepherd, someone to guide and care. That's a shepherd's job. In the biblical day, very often they laid down their lives. A sheep's field would have had four sides, and the gate, or wouldn't have had a gate, but that was where the shepherd would have slept, spending their whole time watching over the sheep, guarding them. And we see what David had to deal with as part of being a shepherd, the dangers he faced, the isolation that he understood. A shepherd was despised by the majority of people, possibly because of the smell, possibly because of the job. And as you see with David, they gave that job to the youngest of the sons, the job that no one else wanted. This morning we read of a prophetic psalm referencing Christ, and we saw how he was mocked. Verse 7 of Psalm 22, all who see me mock me, they make their mouths at me. We see Christ being mocked when he is here on earth. He humbled himself to this earth to be a shepherd, a job that many despise. Having a shepherd means, therefore, as verse 1 says, we shall not be in want. We shall not be in want. If we, as we did this morning, look back at the faithfulness of God over so many years, we look at the manna of the Israelites in the wilderness and how they weren't in want. They didn't have everything that they could possibly want. They were allowed some sort of bread-like quantity and quails. And that was 40 years on the same dinner. Many of us wouldn't think that's a great diet. However, it's all they needed to sustain them. We may want more than we have, but God graciously gives us all that we need. We have a shepherd, therefore we shall not want. On the theme of sheep and shepherd, the sheep on earth, I was about to say humanly, but that doesn't work, on earth needs to submit. If a shepherd's trying to guide a sheep to water and the sheep tries to go the other way, it misses out on the blessings that it's being taken to. A sheep needs to submit to its shepherd. And isn't it true also that we need to submit to our shepherd? I don't know if you've come across in rural areas in France often have sheep and goats all together. And when the shepherd's leading them, the sheep merrily go down the road and the goats sort of prance off wherever they feel like going, and they disappear off the side of the road. So often we can be like the goats that just go our own way. But we should submit to our shepherd. What's the result of that? One thing that we cannot lack is a bit of rest. We've discussed this recently. And verse 2 says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. If we accept Christ as our shepherd, one thing that we can have is an aspect of rest. So often we make our own lives hard by putting our own standards upon us. But that's not what we've been called to. We've been called to serve. To serve Christ, but not to serve in order to tire ourselves out, not to serve to earn righteousness. That's all been done for us. We are to serve out of thanksgiving. And therefore, we should have an element of rest in that service. We shouldn't overburden ourselves thinking that it's going to gain us favour. Isn't it amazing to think of David and the struggles that he faced in life with permanent war, family rebellion? And he was still able to say of God, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. This wonderful place of pasture, this wonderful place of rest and satisfaction. If you were a sheep, you'd desire nothing more than a big green meadow. And that, metaphorically, is what God gives us. So there's sort of a physical restoration, in a sense, in that much of the responsibility is taken from us, but there is also a spiritual restoration to receive. Verse 3 continues, he restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. David, even without Christ, recognized that God would restore his soul. David sinned and failed time and time again. And yet there was an aspect within the law that allowed him to come back to God. There was an aspect within the law that provided means for forgiveness. David was restored spiritually various times. We only need to be restored spiritually once because we have a great sacrifice that once and for all encompasses all. Our great shepherd restores our soul wonderfully. It's our shepherd that made the way for that restoration by dying upon the cross. And he leads us in paths of righteousness. He guides us. He helps us when we are tempted. He helps us when we don't know where to go. We have been given all of his teachings in order to be led in the way that we should live. We read last Sunday morning, Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seats of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. And then we get to verse 4, an incredibly comforting verse. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Two parts, really. I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I will fear no evil, for you are with me. David says that of God. David had in his life many death-filled experiences, many times where death was all around him. The valley of the shadow of death may also refer to the shadow that's cast by sin over the world. We live in a valley of shadow, of sin as it's cast upon the world, this the darkness that we live in. We walk in places that may be filled with spiritual danger, as David walked in places that were filled with physical danger. And yet, we can boldly say that we will fear no evil, not because we are strong, not because we are mighty, but because God is with us. And as we thought this morning, he will never leave us or forsake us. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I don't pretend to be an expert of Palestinian shepherding, but apparently rods and staff, as many of you will know, had two purposes. The rod was more there for discipline, if you will, forceful guidance of the sheep, whereas the staff, I think I've got it the right way around, one way or the other, and the staff was more of a crook used for rescuing the sheep. And they had slightly different roles, these two items. Isn't that what we need so often from our shepherd? Sometimes clear instruction, direction, a telling that we have done something wrong. and at other times a loving hand of rescue. And that's something that our shepherd provides us with. If you want that clear instruction, if you think you don't get it, read through the Sermon on the Mount this evening. If you want that rescuing, turn to him in prayer. Bring all of your problems to him. They may not be solved as we expect, but ultimately, he is the one that rescues. And they comfort us as they guide us through the world. Often we think of discipline as being the opposite of comfort. Discipline is something that's uncomfortable. But actually, when discipline is eroded, our comfortableness disappears entirely. We need instruction. We need guidance. We need boundaries. And don't we recognize that? I hope we recognize that. So we have this shepherd, this wonderful, loving shepherd who leads us, who knows what we need, who cares for us. And we have a wonderful shepherd who humbled himself to come to this earth in the humblest of ways. And then we have, verse 5 and 6 tell us, a great host. David declares of God, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Pictures of blessings there, the head being anointed with oil, the cup overflowing. You prepare a table before me. I may be reading that into that too much, but I see two types of table being prepared by the Lord. As David says, before me. I would argue we have one that's been prepared and one that is being prepared. The one that's been prepared is that wonderful table of communion, the reminder of Christ's sacrifice, the table that we can gather round in fellowship, the table that the Lord set up as a way of recognition of the sacrifices that he was about to make. And then we see that there is a table to be set up that has for us to be set up. I find the timeline and being able to phrase it a bit confusing. It's been set up, but it's being set up for us. That wonderful heavenly feast. The wonderful joy that awaits us with a feast that never ends. We have this heavenly home being prepared before us. And John 14 verse 2 says this. John 14 verse 2. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And if you want a description of that table and a feast at it, read through Revelation, read through various parts and see the joy and the wonder and the praise that is ever present. And that is something that we have ahead of us, something that we have to look forward to. Whilst correction may be uncomfortable on this earth, while we may walk through dark places, while we may miss the opportunities to take that rest, we still have this great table prepared ahead of us. And verse 6 just finishes this psalm so beautifully. I don't really think I need to say anything about it. Goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. The mercy that Christ has bestowed upon us will follow us all the days of our life. If we're trusting in him, that can never be taken away from us. And then, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. As we drew to a close this morning, I quoted, I think, four different verses that all talk about the light and momentary afflictions we have now and the eternal weight of glory to be beheld. And I've said it before here, I love the fourth or fifth or sixth verse of Amazing Grace, depending on which version you're singing. And some versions don't even have this verse, which is a great shame. It says, when we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing his praise than when we've first begun. And for us, 10,000 or 8,000, depending on the version you sing, is an amazing amount of time. Even if you think of 1,000 years, that's back to William the Conqueror, which is something that I can't even imagine happening. What will the world look like in 1,000 years? We have no idea. And yet when we're in heaven, that will be just the very beginning. And how, I want to say amazing, but it's so much more than amazing. Magnificent. Glorious. I don't really like the word awesome because it gets used so much in the wrong context, but how full of awe that makes us, that 1,000 years in heaven will be just the beginning. How long may we live on this earth? Nowhere near 1,000 years, I wouldn't imagine. But we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If this evening you feel as if you are walking through that valley of the shadow of death, if you feel like you're missing out on the green pastures, if, as we thought of this morning, you feel like in some way you are being forsaken by God, you feel like He's turned away from you, if you feel despised by mankind, remember the glories that await. We will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. But it's not just about then. Whilst on this earth, we can take great comfort from knowing that we have God's rod and staff directing and correcting us. And we can come to Him for rest. I don't think I've got everything out of Psalm 23 that I possibly could. But what a wonderful psalm. What a wonderful hope. We have the Lord is our shepherd. We shall not want. Amen.